The thing I got from going to school, elementary school in Hong Kong, was a deathly fear of teachers. It got so bad that in grade two or something, my mom took me to get acupuncture to treat anxiety. Because every time the teacher called on me, my ears would get hot, I turned blood red, and I would have a panic attack. Now that early moment in my life, five or six, was probably why I thought holy means that God is like those austere teachers, unapproachable and frightening. And in the Bible, only God is completely holy. He can make things holy, and we're told to emulate God's holiness. So in our passage today, when Hannah sings about the holy God, it throws me for a loop. This is a very happy moment in Hannah's life. She had a problem, God solved her problem, and if it's me, I would be singing about God's love, God's power, God's faithfulness maybe. Holy doesn't come to mind. So apparently, holy means a lot more than the things that make God scary. It's been said, our identity comes from three things: our story, our values, and our relationships. So we are what happens to us, what we care about, who we care about, and who cares about us. So me needing acupuncture at 5 years old because teachers freak me out, it's part of my story, part of my identity, along with other things that have happened to me since then. So today's passage is about a moment in Hannah's journey of becoming as a person. She struggles with infertility. God helps her, she sings a song of deliverance. But this story from the chapter before, it's a lot more than just about a problem, and it's more than about God solving her problem. Her problem triggers a crisis of identity, and that's why it so distresses her. She doesn't know who she is if she cannot bear children and fails the expectation of her society. And God puts her sense of self back together, and that's what she's singing about. Hannah is one of the two wives of a man named Elkanah, probably a wealthy guy who can afford two wives, and probably took the second wife because Hannah couldn't produce an heir. In that culture, having an heir is crucial to families. It is the wife's only job to produce a baby for the pride and survival of the family name. Hannah is likely embarrassed and distressed, and maybe her husband is also. So at one of the annual community feasts, when the other wife collects a platter full of food from the barbecue to go feed her children, she glares at Hannah as she goes by with an air of superiority. Hannah struggles with the stares from people looking at her single portion of meat on her plate. And this year, her husband hastily scoops her a second helping to fill out the plate a little, whether it is for her benefit or his. But Hannah has no appetite. So distressed in her crisis and the stares that she just sits there in front of the food sobbing. Her husband tries to get her to stop. Again, not sure if it's for his benefit or hers. And he says, come on, stop this crying already. You have me. Isn't that enough? He makes it about him. And he doesn't understand that for Hannah, this is not just about fertility. It's about her identity. Who she is as a person if she cannot do the one thing women are supposed to do in her time. And we're still blaming and shaming women for being childless. The priest Eli is not very sympathetic either. When he sees Hannah in her emotional mess, he accuses her of being drunk, and actually she's having a desperate conversation with God. So Hannah rebuts him to tell him she's praying at the end of her rope. She doesn't say for what, and he doesn't ask. And he says something like, well, I hope it all works out. Hannah bears her grieving soul to God. She wants God to see her and her distress, and she offers God a deal. Give me a baby, and I will give him back to you as your servant. and a miracle happens. She goes home and spends the night with her husband and finds herself pregnant. She named the child Samuel, which sounds something like in Hebrew for God heard. And this song is Hannah's response to God's miracle. There's no one holy like the Lord. There's no one besides you. There's no rock like our God. So what is she expressing when she says no one is holy like the Lord? It's the opposite of God being unapproachable, I think. Hannah is a lowly, sad figure, a woman with a very personal problem, unfortunately insignificant in her world. She's a woman, a wife, nothing about her or what she wants is of interest to the world, as proven by her husband's response and the priest. But because God is holy in the fullness of whatever that means, God notices this insignificant person and her very mundane problem, and the holy God actually intervenes for no apparent reason, not even her prayer, which is theologically problematic because we're not supposed to make deals with God. If you give me a baby, I'll give the baby to you. Why would God need that? Why would God need help with anything? So holy is somehow simultaneously describing God as someone not like us, but also someone who loves us unconditionally and is with us in our lives. Sky Jathani wrote a book about God wanting to be with us over the course of our lifetime of becoming. And he describes other ways we think about God that is not with. Some of us think of God like a vending machine. He calls this life from God, not life with God. It's like you and I are friends because I'm just after something, some benefit from you. So we would read Hannah's story for clues on how to get God to give us what we want. Some of us think of God like a figurehead. This is life over God rather than life with God. It's like I say you and I are friends, but in name only. We never actually spend any time together or talk about anything from our lives. So we would read Hannah's story as a fable because miracles don't happen. We have given up on God to help us with in any tangible way, so we're on our own. Some of us think of God like an authority figure. This is life under God, not life with God. It's like you and I are friends because I don't have a choice. I have to play by your rules or else things will go badly for me. Hannah got her miracle because she was careful to follow through with the deal she made with God. And if I want a miracle, I better be careful to behave myself. And some of us think of God as a slave master. This is life for God, not life with God. It's like you and I are friends, but I don't matter. Only you matter in our relationship. So I served you hand and foot, because this is the reason for my existence. So Hannah got a miracle because she didn't make it about her. She offered herself to serve God's purpose, wherever, whatever it may be, without holding back. Now, it's not like we shouldn't ask God for help or we're not allowed to have ideas about solving our own problems or that God isn't an authority or we don't serve him. The problem is that life with God is more than any of these things or even all of these things. Because these other ways with God makes relationship conditional or transactional based on our performance. That we think God only shows an interest in us as only as long as ... you fill in the blank yourself. You know the Michelin star, that hard to get proof of ultimate performance for a restaurant? Well, it turns out it's bad for business. Somebody did a study. They found out that many restaurants go out of business not long after getting a star. It's not just because the pressure to keep up that excellent performance. A lot of customers see the star and they come in with unrealistic and unforgiving expectations. And a lot of landlords would immediately hike the rent to impossible rates because they want a bigger cut of the success. And competitors will hire away your team members. This is what happens in a relationship based on performance. One moment you're on a podium, people patting you on the back, and without warning, you're shuttering your business, being branded a failure. But what the holy God offers us is life with him. A life committed to being in it together, regardless of performance or lack of it. Because Jesus is our model. And John says in John 1 that Jesus was with God since the beginning. And the whole Jesus coming to be with us mission is to bring us into life with God, Father, Son, and Spirit. In an unconditional relationship not based on performance, you and I are friends because we care about each other. We enjoy each other's company. We trust each other to watch our backs, show up when one of us need to carry the other end of the couch, need someone to carry the other end of the couch. We listen to rants and vents in the without judging, because we're comrades in the trenches, rooting for our success, especially when we're being our worst selves. Hannah's story is a critical moment in her life when she experiences God with her, paying attention, listening, and intervening when God decides it's a good thing to do for her. Not just in that moment, but in all her moments. This is how God is holy. And because God is with us unconditionally, God is the rock we can anchor our identity to. And this is important to us, because when things happen to us that raise questions like, why is this happening? Who cares about the ache in our soul? And what is our worth as a person if we cannot perform and fail to do what is expected of us? Having an anchor makes all the difference between coming through the crisis with a feeling a lesser person or a more grounded person. Have you had a moment like Hannah's? I was a desperately lonely immigrant kid. Every time somebody leaves, I would struggle to imagine life without them. When I graduated, I couldn't picture a career because I didn't think anyone would hire me. Each time my identity takes a hit, just like you, I have to put my sense of self back together. And what makes all the difference to us when everything falls apart is something unshakable that grounds and anchors our identity, some sort of foundation that are not things that drift, unlike our beauty, our body, our mind, circumstances, approval, wealth. It can all go. I remember during one of my identity crises in my life, when I was feeling like a total loser, I looked around a table during lunch with relatives, and I felt anchored by them. Recently, one of my mom's childhood friends came to visit from Toronto. They've been friends for 70 years. There was a group of them, kids who all had hard lives, but became a family of sorts by choosing to take care of each other. My grandfather's carpentry shop became a sort of clubhouse for them. They grew up with each other, keeping each other company and watching each other's backs, because grown-ups were busy or absent. And they're still friends with each other, even though they live in different places. And at this life stage, they're navigating grief together, from aging, from illnesses of minds and bodies, and from death. Whatever else church is supposed to be, it's supposed to be that. People to do life with. People who get to see us as we are because we trust them. They can give us vital feedbacks we need for our process of becoming. What the immortal, unchanging God offers is himself and his love as an immovable anchor for our identity. A rock more secure than human relationships. His with-us-ness that never changes throughout our lifetime of becoming and rebuilding. The point of Hannah's story is not a template to pray to get what we want, because we know God doesn't work like a vending machine, but that this is why human beings need the holy God with us, because life is hard. And it makes all the difference to know that God is mindful of us, he's got us, however things may turn out. God with us means we're never alone. He's safe for us to approach and to trust and to ask for help. There may be a miracle yet, so never count God out. He may not simply do the thing we want, but he just may surprise us the way he will intervene, the way he will get us through. Hannah got what she wanted, sort of. It was not to hover over her baby, because as soon as the baby was off breastfeeding, she kept her promise and sent the baby to go live with the priest and begin his apprenticeship. But what Hannah got was affirmation she needed as a person during an identity crisis, the assurance that she mattered to the holy God no less. Because what makes life hard is not just the hard things that happen to us, but the loneliness when we go through things and no one cares or understands, and the questions about our worth and purpose. At Hannah's lowest point, the Holy God affirmed her, and she got a miracle that healed her soul and expanded her sense of self and deepened her anchor into God. And God is not just with Hannah, but all of ancient Israel and all creation, because God, it turned out, had a problem too. Hannah lived in the time of the judges, and her people lacked the leadership to deal with what's coming down the pike. We have already seen the callous way the high priest functions. His sons are worse. And the book of Judges described this time as chaos, where everyone did what was right in their own eyes. Israel needs better leaders because the Philistines are coming. The Philistines are called the sea people, the warriors from the Greek kingdoms who are about to cross the Mediterranean Sea to begin their conquest of the Middle East. God is preparing to transition Israel to a kingdom with a king. And as part of this new system, God needs someone to be his spokesperson and kingmaker. And this is Samuel, Hannah's miracle baby. So two birds, one stone. God needs a new leader for his people. Hannah needs a baby. When God noticed Hannah in her distress, God accepted her offer to be the vessel for this baby. We live our lives navigating things that challenge us in our becoming. And how we respond to these things will either shrink our souls or grow our souls. John Orkberg is the pastor in California. He wrote a book called The Me I Want to Be. And he tells a story about the time when his wife sat him down for one of these till life death do us part kind of get real conversation about their marriage. He writes, "You know," she said, "when our marriage is at its best, I feel like we share responsibilities. We divide our work well, and our kids see us do that, and I feel valued, and I think that's important to our family. But for some time, because you feel so many demands in your life, this value has been slipping. When our marriage is working well, I also feel like we both know each other's lives. You know details about my life, and I know details about yours. And I feel like that's slipping, too. Lately, I know what's going on with you, but you don't ask me much about what's going on with me." She went on, "When our marriage is at its best, you also bring a kind of lightness and joy to it. You can listen and laugh and be spontaneous. You haven't been doing that for a while. I love that guy, and I miss that guy." And he says, "I knew what she was talking about. I miss that guy too," I told her. "I would love to feel like that, but I feel like I'm carrying so many problems. I have personnel issues and financial challenges at work. I have writing projects and travel commitments. I feel like I'm carrying this weight all the time. I get what you're saying, but I need you to know I'm doing the best I can." And then he says he spends the next few days pouting. But he finds himself gnawing on a question. He thought back over his life, obsessed with performance, always doing his best to get good grades at school, to get girls to like him, to impress people at work. But then he realizes the real reason he did all that was because he wanted a life to feel alive inside. "I realized this then," he writes, "and I know it now. I want that life more than I want anything else. Not because I think I'm supposed to, not because it says somewhere that you should. I want it. There's a me I want to be. Life is not about any particular achievement or experience. The most important task in your life is not what you do, but what you become. When Abraham met God in Genesis, God told him, this is holy ground. Take off your shoes. So either his shoes are really dirty and God hates it when people dirties his holy ground, or what God is really saying is that this is a safe place, a holy place. So kick off your shoes, get comfortable. It comes down to how we understand holy. And if God is really safe to live life with, then he is a good person for us to anchor our identity to, because he is constant and he will never leave or abandon us. This is what Hannah learns when she bears her soul to God, and when Abraham trusted God to bear his feet, that changed the trajectory of his story. The God who is with Hannah in her struggle is the same God who kept a watchful eye on Adam and Eve after they left paradise to strike out on their own. The same God who journeyed with the ancient Israelites for 40 years in the wilderness when they were too scared to tangle with the giants in the promised land. The same God who went into the furnace to be with Daniel and his friends because they refused to worship a Babylonian idol. The same God who sends Jesus to come into the world to be with us and to show us the way to resurrection life. This same God wants to be with us in the journey of our becoming. And not just us as individuals, but also as a community as a common identity anchor. And because God is holy, he is safe for us to be ourselves with. Without armor or fancy dress, he will guide us with the crucial insights we need to become everything God had in mind when he dreamed us up, so we can become more fully alive inside, living the life we dream about. Take a moment and begin a conversation with God. A blessing for you who feel like the bad thing. Here's the blessing for you who feel like the bad thing. You are everybody's reminder of frailty, of life's cruelty. Your chronic pain or depression or regular scans remind those around you that life isn't fair or as easy as they had hoped. Blessed are you who try to hide your humanity, you who temper your complaints to avoid mentioning your next appointment, who pretend you're doing better than you are to make reality a little more palatable to others. You who try and try and try to make yourself easier to love, easier to be around, easier to manage. But dear one, blessed are you because you're not the bad thing. Your illness, your grief, or your despair or addiction is not too much. It's just your humanity showing. And blessed are we who get to see it up close, who despite our own fears and reminders of our finitude, get to hold your hand as you face each day with courage, as you face things you didn't choose. It is this kind of courageous living, the kind that shows all the shabby edges, that we're so thankful to see up close. You, blessed one, remind us that life is so beautiful and life is so hard, and we feel lucky for the privilege to do life with you, no matter how difficult, no matter how messy. You are not the bad thing. You are a gift, and we love every bit of you. Amen.